You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
This year, International Women's Day, March 8th, was celebrated in Vancouver by a number of separate events, but no common march or gathering. Sheila Day, a longtime feminist activist, was part of a panel discussion at one of these events held at the Vancouver Public Library. Questions of the accomplishments of the feminist movement in Canada were explored, as well as the major challenges now facing the struggle for women's equality. Sheila joins me in the studio to resume this discussion. She is director of the Poverty and Human Rights Centre in Vancouver. She is chair of the Human Rights Committee of the Canadian Feminist Alliance for International Action, and she also is advisor on human rights to the National Association of Women and the Law. Good morning, Sheila.
Good morning.
What are some of your personal recollections of moments in the Canadian situation when feminist women were galvanized into public action?
Well, I think there are a number of moments that are really important in my view. One I would start with was the 1971 abortion caravan. And that was a moment when women across the country joined together and traveled from coast to coast to go to Ottawa to lobby politicians. There was a great sense of determination and I think anger about women claiming the right to their reproductive freedom. You have to remember that until 1969 in this country, it was against the law to even disseminate information about birth control. So this was a moment of claiming the right to one's own body. And the women who were involved in that caravan, I think, had a very good time, as well as knowing that they were involved in a very important political struggle. So one of the lovely things they did when they got to Ottawa was they chose a small contingent of their members to actually go into the visitors' gallery in Parliament while Parliament was in session. And those women dressed themselves in the dignified women's clothes of the day, hats, gloves, purses, etc., went into the visitors' gallery and then chained themselves to the seats in the visitors' gallery and proceeded to disrupt Parliament. And of course, this made a great sort of political and public splash about the rights of the very serious rights of women to control their own bodies and to decide when and with whom they would have children.
That's 69. If you move forward, where?
If I move forward, then the next moment I would think of that I think was so important was a terrible ruling from the Supreme Court of Canada that came in 1973. And there was a Aboriginal woman named Jeanette Laval who took a case forward that had to do with the sections of the Indian Act that for so long had discriminated against Aboriginal women. Aboriginal people in Canada, of course, had imposed upon them this very patriarchal Victorian law, which non-Aboriginal women had also suffered from, but had managed to make come unstuck in some ways during the earlier part of the 20th century. But Aboriginal women were still stuck with this law that essentially said they were the property of the men that they married. So if you were an Aboriginal woman and you married out, that is, you married someone who was non-Aboriginal, you lost your Indian status and you lost your ability to confer it on your children. Whereas if you were an Aboriginal man and you married a non-Indian woman, you conferred Indian status on her and on any children that you had. So it was a completely sex discriminatory provision, privileging the male line, privileging the Indians as male. And Jeanette Laval married out, lost her Indian status, wasn't allowed to live on her reserve anymore, couldn't pass on her status to her children, went to the Supreme Court of Canada under our old Bill of Rights and lost. And so the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that all that was protected here was equality before the law. She'd been treated in the same way as all other Aboriginal women were. We just compared women to women, right? This was a procedural guarantee, and consequently there was no discrimination and no violation of the equality protection. And that was a galvanizing moment, I think, for women generally. They understood at that moment that there was sex discrimination here that was just, you know, intractable somehow, that it was, and that the courts weren't going to help under that old law. And it caused marches of Aboriginal women. It caused, I think, a more general understanding among women across the country that there was something here that was really important to deal with in terms of how women would be treated by the laws of our country.
The period we're sort of discussing is a period of great explosion of the feminist movement, advances, challenges, outrageous confrontations, which were so empowering. We were followed that period with what Susan Faludi, you know, wrote her book, The Backlash. And I'm wondering how you see the consequences of that backlash, which took place in Canada. She wrote about the United States, but it took place here too.
Well, I think the backlash has in some way silenced the women's movement and confused it in some way. And I think we're still dealing with that that period. I think it's very difficult for us to have the sort of solidarity across diverse groups of women that was there in the early 70s. And so I think one of the things that's happened to us, which has got some real benefits, is that women's organizations in some way have become very specialized. So they're dealing either with a particular issue or with a particular group of women and how discrimination affects that particular group. But we've become, in some sense, siloed because of it. I think all of that work has needed to be done because women are, of course, a very diverse group in the population. But now I think it's a moment when we need the solidarity across all of that diversity back again as well. And so I think we're building, I hope we're building towards that again.
That's looking at it as a feminist movement. I am active in the anti-war movement, and what I always bemoan is the absence of feminist consciousness within this movement. And it's sort of the sense of various social movements themselves being segregated one from another, as opposed to having their separate agendas, but reinforcing a common common aim, something that brings us together in the presence of the concerns of each in the work of all.
I agree with that so much. I feel some similar kinds of frustration because I spend quite a lot of time in the anti-poverty movement, and I find the anti-poverty movement often completely degendered, even though I don't think we can deal with poverty unless we deal with women's poverty. And so I think women's, the particularities of women's poverty are right at the center of what needs to be done. And yet somehow or another that gets lost in the conversation and lost in the design of strategies. So I agree with you. There's some both solidarity across the many groups of women that we need, and there's real integration into other movements that we need. And we're not there yet.
Definitely not. When we look back at something like the abortion caravan, and as you said, they did some outrageous things, and it was so gratifying for the women and so really empowering, and excited people who may not have been there but identified and saw the necessity of that kind of action. Do you see some seeds of this outrage that leads to actions which are imaginative and therefore freeing people's energies happening now? Or Is that something that too needs a little more time to sprout again?
No, I think there are some things that are happening now that are like that. And I think that there are younger women who are working on projects that are completely different. There's a group of young women called the Miss G Project, and they're doing things. And of course, they're working with web-based communications and things like that in a way that my generation never did, never, you know, had the access to or the tools to use. So I do think that different things are happening now, and that we're going to see quite different kinds of projects and actions come out of that. One of the things that I think has changed is that there has been a big change in the media, and so, you know, we have a different media reality now than we had in the early 70s, when some of these things were going on, when the media was actually interested in these events that somehow appeared out of the women's movement. And I don't think that's the case now. So I think we have a very anti-feminist media that really, in some sense, wants to suppress the news about what's going on with women. And so women now have to find other ways of breaking out of that silencing. And we're working on it.
That's good news. And I'm wondering what you would identify as, if you had to choose one main challenge that the feminist movement must face today, what would that be? What area of struggle do you think is really primary?
Well, I would say, and I think this is true of Canada, I would say it around the world. I think the real question that we have to tackle now is one of allocation of resources. I think inside every society, what we see is that resources are being allocated essentially to privilege those who are already privileged. And they're, in Canada, they're being allocated in such a way as to take away social programs that have been so enormously important to women's advancement. So we see a huge erosion of social programs over the last two decades. And social programs are, you know, the egalitarian building blocks of our society. They're the way we sort of, they are the way we lift everyone up. They are the way we move women forward. And when we start to take that away, we do terrible damage, I think, to the to political justice, to equality, to democracy in the society. And I think that's true in every country. So we see, women are the face of poverty around the world. And somehow, as societies, we have to get to the point where we acknowledge that and where we're willing to take the resources of our societies and allocate them in a way that in fact does make women equal in the societies. I think that's a very big challenge now. And so I look at something like these shovel-ready projects that all our bailout budgets are are promoting at the moment. And shovel-ready projects look a lot like jobs for men to me. And there are real questions for me about whether or not we're just moving more and more into allocating resources towards sort of breadwinner models of, you know, who will get the benefits of government resource allocation at a moment when everybody's frightened, without thinking about what that does to our commitments to equality for women or to democracy or to fairness. And so I worry about that a lot, that we can, in a moment like this, be even more regressive in our thinking about what kind of society we want to build. And I think that's a danger worldwide. And I see now, you know, international bodies sending out messages about their concerns about what the global recession will do to women and children. And, you know, I think that's something that we all have to take very seriously. I don't think we can move towards resolving the real challenges that we have globally in terms of environment and equality and dealing with poverty unless we're prepared to put women's equality right in the center of this. I think women's equality has a lot to do with whether or not we can face the global challenges that are ahead of us.
Well, that is a good note to end and to have us reflect on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Sheila Day, and she is the Director of Poverty and Human Rights Center in Vancouver. She's also chair of the Human Rights Committee of the Canadian Feminist Alliance for International Action and an advisor on human rights to the National Association of Women and the Law.